How many years have you been bringing us movies from Toronto Imaginative Film Festival, Jason Ryle?
Well, this is the fourth time I've been to Scott McGovat. But I've been working with Imaginative, which is based in Toronto, for over 15 years now. So it's been quite a long time supporting Indigenous filmmakers and taking them around the world, which is, a great privilege.
Mm. So what kind of package now, what we have got here to Scott McGovat? Because we know that always the films that come from over the seas have always been very good. So what kind of, how high is the bar this year?
Well, that's what's amazing about the Indigenous film community. Every year it's something new and exciting and changes and develops in really exciting ways. I didn't program anything here specifically this year. Some of the works that are here at the festival have been at Imaginative. And I think what's, again, incredible about Scott McGovat this year, not just the fact that it's turning 20, which is a very important milestone, but also the North American focus. So I think if we're looking at North American Indigenous cinema, I mean, we've seen, again, continued growth, a diversity in how and which stories are told. And this is what we've been wanting for so long. And, you know, when we first started Imaginative, it wasn't like this. There wasn't this number of works that were produced. So many times we were trying to find films. And now so many are being made from all these different Indigenous nations. And this is going to leave a lasting impact on global cinema. I mean, we have nations who now have screen cultures, have a history of stories on screen. And that's only going to continue. So this is really exciting.
Mm. Have you spotted, Heli, a movie that you want to watch now?
Right now, I don't have the program with me, but I've made myself a schedule very well. But there are some holes, so in case if something comes up, then I can like go and check something out. But I think I have a program right here. Magic.
What do you think about the front page?
I love it. You know, I think what's really fantastic, when I saw this, it was exciting. And it reminds me of Imaginative with our festival. I mean, the first few years of Imaginative, our audiences were very low. And what we heard is that people maybe thought that Imaginative was a festival about Indigenous people, only for Indigenous people. Mm-hmm. But the whole point of this is to get as many people as possible to see these films, because that's very important. So we changed our marketing to be something, you know, a little bit more funny, perhaps, a little bit more playful, by remixing old movie posters, but giving them an Indigenous twist. So this really reminds me of that. But also, too, it speaks to really the positive activism that's happening internationally around Indigenous issues worldwide. And, you know, it's still true to this day as it was in the past. You know, our education systems in our countries don't always give the full history, a balanced view of history, or certainly not an Indigenous view of history. Same thing in the media. So it still falls on Indigenous artists, Indigenous filmmakers, to really kind of tell these stories that aren't available elsewhere, and give voice to, I think, the amazing activism and change that's happening around the world. So I think this is wonderful. I think it's very positive.
Mm-hmm. Can I take a look at it?
Yeah.
And the thing that, Terry Cutler, the what was the movie, the newest one? You're a producer for that movie.
I'm producer for both,
yeah,
as far as
yes.
In the festival. Snip and Giweda.
Giweda, the story, I think that people can relate to that story very much here.
Yeah, I think both. Both. I'm very happy that both Snip and Giweda are playing together here at Scott McGovat. They work very well together. So Snip was the first one and Giweda was the second. Both have been inspired by the life of Chani Wenjack, who was a young boy who was taken away to residential school, to boarding school, and his tragic death after at 12 years old, trying to escape from the school. And so the first one, it tells a story in perhaps a more allegorical way, and Giweda is perhaps a more direct telling of this young boy's story. I think both raise really important questions. Terrell Calder's animation, of course, is very unique. It's beautiful, it's powerful. These stories are very dark. but incredibly artistic and beautiful at the same time. So it's great to have them, and I think that's one of the beautiful but sad truths of Indigenous people worldwide, is that we can relate to these kinds of things.
So we don't have problems finding dark stories.
Yeah, but we all love to laugh. So yeah, yeah. Sure, yeah. It's a balance, maybe.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, I think that's what's really, really wonderful about our cinema, is that it's healing. It's healing powers, right? When you make these things, it's healing for the filmmakers who make it. It's healing for the audiences who watch it. And then they may be difficult subjects sometimes, but I think the power of that is in healing. But then we see, you know, over the years, we see different types of films too. We have comedy, sci-fi, documentary, experimental work. And I think that's what's been also really exciting about Sami filmmaking, is how much more of this we're seeing in recent years, too. So as an international programmer of Indigenous work, it's incredible to see how the Sami film community and industry has also really grown significantly over the last several years. And so amazing work coming out of here.
Mm. And now everybody, like you saw, all the kids are running around here with their mobile phones, and they're making shooting films right there, right now. And the possibilities are so much bigger what we have when we're younger, and everything has gone so fast now.
Yeah.
The technology is not an issue nowadays. Of course, people make movies and with very expensive cameras and lenses, but you get drones that doesn't cost anything. You can make shots that cost a lot of thousands and thousands before, and now you can make beautiful films with very little budgets.
Yes, it's very true. And I think, I mean, I don't know how much of this is true or not, but one of the statistics I've heard recently is that now actually most people on Earth view screen content on a smartphone. So it's not even so much on a television screen or a movie screen. It's actually something very small. And I think that says a lot about how we view and consume screen-based work. But we talked about this before, Aslak. I mean, I think it's that power of having representation on screen. I mean, us growing up, it was a very different world. Either we were absent from the screens, or it was incorrect portrayals of us on screens and the impact that it has on us. But we have children or nieces and nephews, you know, the ones who are playing here today. I mean, they're growing up in a completely different world where they can have access to this, and the impact that's going to have on their lives and on our nations, and, you know, expanding from there, it's really profound. It's really amazing. I mean, this is what we wanted, right? This is why we're doing things like Scout Magovat and Imaginative, is to change the world. And, you know, that happens every year that these festivals happen, every year that more films are made. That's what's happening. That's the impact of it.
So it's like a paradise island that you can get to visit once a year.
Yeah, it is a beautiful paradise.
Because then when you come to the everyday world, and I open the TV and watch the TV, you don't get to see the Indigenous films, like maybe 2, 3, 4 in a year, and then some of them are bought from Sweden and Norway, but in the Finnish television it's very little. And what most is produced is and screened is comes from US, and but a lot of in Finland they make a lot of Finnish television programs nowadays, but very, very little Indigenous content.
Yeah, I mean, that's
how
really
do you see that there.
It's a similar thing. I mean, we have the Aboriginal People's Television Network in Canada, which is one of the main national broadcasters. So, I mean, there's a significant outlet for that. I mean, getting the work seen by larger audiences and having greater distribution is certainly the next step and the next challenge that we're facing. And it's slowly changing. I mean, the more that people become aware of this, the more they're looking for these things. And also, I mean, you know, it's a great tagline that we use for our work that we do at the European Film Market at the Berlinale when we're talking about Indigenous cinema, and it's original storytellers. And that means two things, obviously, right? I mean, our stories are very ancient at times, but also from the larger mainstream perspective, they're very new. So they're very original and unique, because these types of stories have rarely been told on screen. And I think that interest in this work speaks to this. So, I mean, I think there's, as international audiences, you know, being offer the same types of stories over and over again. The opportunity that Indigenous cinema presents is something very new and fresh, insightful, but coming from cultures and people that have been telling stories for a very long time.
Like Sami Blood, you have seen it. And it won the best manuscript and the best actor in Sweden, the film gala.
Yeah.
And so, and it was a great thing in Sweden that the Swedes put it so high that it's the best movie, you could say. But then, if we can think about here in the Finnish side, that like I got the idea this would never happen in Finland. This could never happen in Finland. But we have the Katja Karlov, who has also produced films and got also very high.
And I say, you know, like a few things on this. I mean, I think of Alanis Obomsawin, who's the, you know, one of the great documentary filmmakers in Canada, and one of the, you know, the masters of Indigenous cinema, if we want to use that term. She's 85 years old, and she just talks still to this day about things that she thought were impossible when she was younger. And she said the changes, she says it's important to always remind ourselves of the positive changes that have happened. And perhaps Sami people in Sweden would have said this 10 years ago that they couldn't have imagined something like Sami Blood having this impact. Mm-hmm. And Sami Blood is something that we're all proud of. I mean, it's such an important thing for all Indigenous people worldwide. Like us in Canada and Australia, New Zealand, we're incredibly proud of that film too in terms of what she's done. We can relate to that story. And something that's significant. I mean, we think that too, you know, we had Atar Najwat, Zacharias Kunuk's film in 2001. It won a significant prize at Cannes. It swept the National Film Awards in Canada. And we thought, okay, here, finally, now this is going to open the doors. And it did to some degree, but maybe not as quickly as we thought it would. So I think the important thing that we also have to hold the funders responsible for is to let them know that this isn't a trend, this isn't a fad. Sami Blood isn't just one thing that they should be proud of and stop there. It has to be the start of a whole new type of storytelling relationship and funding relationship. But all the Nordic countries need to learn that as well. I mean, there's such great talent, so many great stories, and it's just important to support them.
So, Terry Calder, you're here. Here for the first time in Arena for the Skatmak Award, and we talked with Jason about two of your films that are shown here. So, as a filmmaker, what thrives you as a filmmaker?
Very passionate in telling stories that have never existed in the world, my stories. There are so many nations in Canada and all around the world that need to be told, and I'm always excited to tell them, or to even find which stories are my own to tell.
What are your stories to tell?
I grew up in the center of Canada, which is near Winnipeg. I'm Métis, which means I'm mixed. I am Cree Ojibwe and Norwegian. and my story is a story of how I've always had a complicated relationship living between those two worlds, trying to figure out my place in that. And I think that speaks a lot to a lot of people's experience. I think that I get very upset at some how Indigenous issues are treated, but it's my place to actually be that voice to the other side of Canada as well, being both. I feel like I can take a lot of liberties.
So what did you do then when you were younger? When did you realize that you need to make these films?
I've always been an artist ever since I was born. I think it's kind of Indigenous people. We thrive when we're making crafts, and we're called dream speakers. So they always thought I had an ability to make things. So I used to glue people together, make, you know, little worlds. I never thought I'd be an animator, but eventually I became one. I went to school for visual art. I was a drawing major, took some film theater, and I just started making film. Just film about 10 years ago. Before that, I was a performance artist and a visual artist.
So the animations that you do, I don't think so many people do that kind of animations, right?
Stop motion animation is there are not many people that are crazy enough to take the time to make these films. They take a very long time. The 15-minute piece took 9 months for me to make because I work independently. You know, there's a handful of people. There's an animation collective in Toronto. There are very few Indigenous people working with stop motion animation, but it's I love it because I was trained in computer animation, but I wasn't able to make anything. So I was really, really missing my hands and making little moccasins and little things to actually go into the sets. So it satisfies me, and I get to play with dolls. I think it's really it's really amazing.
So what was Jason's role in the movies that we are seeing here now in Inari?
As a producer,
I'm credited as a producer on these works, but I mean, obviously, this is Terrell's artistry and her vision on there. It was just a real privilege to work on them with her. The first one, Snip, actually originated as this kind of mixed media performance that I commissioned for Imaginative back in 2014. I liked this idea of creating a site specific performance with video and an oral performance. So I paired an Indigenous author with Indigenous filmmakers, and the filmmaker created a video that would play on the screen as the author read an original short story to go with it. Mm-hmm. So it was a really great collaboration that sort of developed into a single film with Terrell. So, I mean, it was really great for me being on, you know, having a creative outlet as well, and just sort of, you know, I say Snip really was a primary, for me at the very least, a creative producer role than it was maybe a traditional producer role in terms of getting financing and that kind of thing. I mean, you can speak to kind of your experience in terms of how that was.
I'm nodding. Nodding works well on radio. Yes, absolutely. Well, the storyteller, it was called the Storyteller's Screening, and that was the impetus for Snip, the idea of, like, oral storytelling, the history of Indigenous stories were always oral, and why colonial history is perceived as truth when it's biased, the history, it's racist at times, even searching for my own history compared to my oral story and trying to figure out who I am. You really got that ball rolling, the idea of, you know, with that, the history of telling stories.
And it was about the questioning or examining the power of the written word, and again, this revisionist idea of what's history. It's a very complicated and complex sort of time, truthfully, for these things. The writer that we selected to be part of this thing, actually, like last year, over a year ago, his Indigenous identity came into question. Mm-hmm. And there was misleading information, really, as to sort of if he was Indigenous or not. So it actually, without our knowledge or awareness, it actually added another, or intent rather, it added another layer to the meaning of identity and history and the power of word. So it was, it was complex and still is a little, actually.
It still is. Yeah. It still is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the more we make these movies, the more people are popping up with questioning their identities or realizing that they don't have to question their identities anymore, right? It goes both ways.
It does go both ways, but I mean, also speaking as a mixed person, a lot of people who come to me that are mixed are very excited.
And me too.
You know.
Me too, yeah.
Hashtag.
Yeah.
With me specifically, because it's Métis, we are a nation of mixed bloods. Like, we are actually like a people. Mm. So a lot of people are coming to us saying, well, I'm part. And you'll find in Canada a lot of people are part Indigenous because it's sort of a hidden history. A lot of our philosophy or our systems are based on Indigenous systems, and that's actually leading me to my next and new film, like the idea that there's a hidden Indigenous impression throughout our government and throughout everything that people are just now recognizing or coming to terms with, you know. But it's a careful one, especially when it comes to identity. I would never want to get in somebody's way. I mean, as far there's many provinces in Canada. For some reason, Ontario, which was close to where the Métis had a rebellion, the Métis went into hiding. So we were actually not really even brought into this until 10 years ago. So a lot of people are coming out as Indigenous, whereas it was more integrated into First Nations politics, or even they lived. So we've been reunited to a certain extent. I would not want to judge somebody who's doing that. But like I said, with the writer, there's a real danger in that as well. People miss also gray eyes, right? Gray eyes?
Gray owl.
Yeah. Gray owl. There's a lot of people that come in as imposters as well. And I guess the real danger isn't trying to figure out their identity. It's the stories that they're telling. Because a lot of them reinforce the Hollywood Indian or the Stoic Indian. They don't actually have enough of putting that different story out there. And I think that's really what's key, is it presenting that different story.
Mm. Mm.